You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where instead of participating in the Hollywood Me Too March, we're participating in the worldwide Not Me Anti-March. I'm your host, Justin M. Wozniewski. And if you enjoy your trip into the midside here today, why don't you tell a friend? We would love to have him or her stop by as well. And yes, I use gendered pronouns. That's what you get here in the midside. Joining me this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
Is it so much a march as it is a sit-in? I mean, we're not really doing anything at the moment. I mean, we're recording, but I suspect we're all just sort of sitting there. It's not really an anti-march. It's more of a lay-down.
Well, isn't a lay-down an anti-march? Because it's like, I mean, maybe I'm using the word anti or the prefix anti wrong, but it's the opposite of a march. So the opposite of a march is where you just lay around.
Yeah.
Right. So if laying around and marching collides, it annihilates in a flash of light.
That's right. That's right.
Right. And then we go.
Oh, man. Nine. So much that's March right. Madness.
Wow. A March Madness joke in November. Also,
yeah, that probably
us.
Confused a lot of people. Like,
I said that because it confused me for a second. I was like, wait, did it become March all of a sudden?
Yeah, I saw college basketball on TV, and I was pissed off.
No, there's no basketball version. And do you want me to introduce you? It's guys, everyone, this is James. He's from the Hills of White Privilege. Hi, James.
Hi, James. Mm-hmm. Good.
That was your introduction.
That was my introduction. I just said hi.
We're all experts right, at yes,
I think that
this is a comedy extravaganza. This podcast is just going to be so much yes anding. Oh, man.
So apparently Daniel's the only one who came to play this episode. So why don't we just throw the show to him in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
Louis C.K., he's been accused by five women of sexual misconduct in the most stunning no-duh headline of the year. In 2002, a comedy duo, Dana Min Goodwin and Julia Mwalov, these sound like made-up names, landed their big break, a chance to perform at the U.S. Comedy Arts Festival in Aspen, Colorado, when Louis C.K. invited them to hang out in his hotel room for a nightcap after the late-night show. The bars were closed and they wanted to celebrate. He was someone they admired. They were together. His intention seemed collegial. This all comes from a New York Times story. But as soon as they sat down in his room, still wrapped in their winter jackets and hats, Louis C.K. asked if he could take out his penis. They thought it was a joke and laughed it off. And then he really did, Ms. Goodman said in an interview with the Times. He proceeded to take off all of his clothes and then got completely naked and started masturbating. This is apparently a thing that Louis C.K. has done on other occasions as well, and unbeknownst to me, was a thing at all. Initially, Louis C.K. and his publicist declined to comment at all, but later in the week, he actually released a statement to EW, and I will only read one sentence of the statement, and it is this, quote, "These stories are true, period." End quote. Justin, why do so many powerful men just want women to watch them beat off?
I'm disappointed that you didn't read more of the statement, but we can get to that.
Oh, we'll
in
get
a second
to the statement. I just wanted to.
Well, yeah, we'll get to the statement.
Okay, okay. To answer your question is because they're not really powerful men. This is a man who has deep issues with self-esteem and deep insecurities, and This is
Justin,
the kind of
thing
where
you may be psychologizing here.
Yeah, I think I might be. It's become what I do, so I'm just gonna
I'm
go
kidding.
With it. Yeah.
It's just so obviously true. I thought I'd call you out on it on this one time that there's no room to doubt you whatsoever.
Oh, okay.
The only time it's acceptable even to me to psychologize.
Yeah. We're okay with psychologizing Louis C.K. That's
In this moment, we're whipping
out
your penis.
I'm okay with psychologizing anyone where it's like obvious, like that what you're saying is true.
That's right.
Well, at least I found a line that you guys are okay psychologizing now. So let us continue.
This is the line, and you are on the right side of it today.
That's show
okay.
Ever.
Let's continue to berate Louis C.K.'s psychology. But yeah, and I'm glad you guys agree, because this is really, really, really important culturally to me, because this is very similar to Harvey Weinstein and, you know, even the behavior we've seen of Brett Ratner. I don't know exactly what he's been accused of. I know Ellen Page said he said some fucked up shit, but I think other people have accused Brett Ratner of maybe assault as well. And there have been other directors. I mean, Elliot just dropped in our Welcome to Midside thread, the executive producer of The Flash, Andrew Kreisberg. He's been accused of this stuff as well. And these are people who rise to these positions of power because they're trying to, in an underhanded way, achieve sexuality. And he's, you know, standing here in front of these women doing this because he doesn't believe there will actually be a woman who wants to have sex with him. So this is the closest to sexual gratification he can get.
Yeah, it's interesting. The mindset of Louis C.K. is one that's always been kind of on display in his comedy, but also just in, like, his interviews and whatnot. So I'm watching a documentary on Hulu called Too Funny to Fail, which is the story of the rise and fall of the Dana Carvey Show, which I didn't even know was a thing, but it's an amazing documentary. But anyway, Louis C.K. was a writer on it. But one of the clips that got me, especially today after all this news, is he was talking about why he didn't want to hire Jimmy Fallon for the Dana Carvey Show. And he basically said, look, he was young and good looking. All the women in the room liked him, and I hated it. I hated the fact that they liked him, and I was this hideous guy who they weren't going to like if he was in the writer's room. It's like, wow. You openly admit that you didn't hire a super talented guy at the time. I don't know if he's talented now. But because he was a sexual threat to you.
I want to be clear about who you're talking about here. Are you talking about Dana Carvey because he ran the show?
Sorry. No, Louis C.K. was a writer on the show.
Oh, and he was the one who would have hired Jimmy Fallon or not?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Well, that's very revealing because Dana Carvey, to me, is a good guy if you listen to the things he says off camera. And his career has kind of disappeared. And it's interesting, Louis C.K. wrote a documentary about Dana Carvey called Too Funny to Fail, where Dana Carvey is 10 times more talented than Louis C.K.
Louis C.K. would have been a writer. So let's be really clear. This is my fault. Many suppressed premises in what I said, because I've assumed all of you have already watched this documentary. The documentary is about the show.
You
Louis
pulled
C.K.
the Dr. Drew, asshole.
Louis C.K. was a writer on the show. That's right. Louis C.K. was a writer on the show. And at the time, they were hiring other writers for the show. And Louis C.K. didn't want to hire Jimmy Fallon because he was young and attractive, and the other women on the show liked him.
Okay, that is one of the most despicable things I have ever heard in my entire life. Like, you've actually made me dislike Louis C.K. more.
How?
And it's actually, if you add an extra layer to it, you know, not to be like the arbiter of male attractiveness or whatever, but when we're looking at Hollywood, is Jimmy Fallon really the biggest threat looks-wise? That's how lowly Louis C.K. thinks of himself, and also how little he takes care of himself, that he's that threatened by Jimmy Fallon. And when I talk about taking care of yourself, look at Jimmy Kimmel. Remember how big Jimmy Kimmel used to be?
Yeah.
And then look at him now? Like, he looks like a completely different person, and he's much more attractive now.
Whoa there. He's married.
I'm not interested in Jimmy Kimmel. I'm just saying it can be done, and comedians can take care of themselves.
It's true. Yeah, and what was so striking to me is that Louis C.K. openly admits this in an interview without any sense of, like, I should be ashamed of myself or whatever. He was just like, yeah, you know, I'd hated myself at the time for it, but that's pretty much the truth. That's what I did. Like, no, like, what I mean is not ashamed of himself. What I mean is, like, he openly admits it now in a documentary that a bunch of people are going to see in a way that is unabashed. I guess that's what I mean. He's so unabashed about it, which is crazy to me.
But that's the perverse thing about his entire career is he made his money and his name off of this unabashed being despicable. That's not good grammar, but it's just everything he said was despicable. And what was appealing to people about it was that he was unabashed about it. If you watch his show and then even his movie, right? The trailer came out a few weeks ago and we talked about it. And it was, you know, not surprisingly canceled this week. The movie was, you know, the premieres and everything were canceled. But the fact that he would even think about releasing that in today's day and age, why did he need the studio to cancel that? Don't you think anyone with any sort of fucking social graces would be like, call up the studio and say, hey, guys, maybe we shouldn't like premiere this movie right now. Like, it's an important issue. And we really address, you know, I'm saying benevolently, he actually made a good movie, but he didn't because he's Louis C.K. But if it were a benevolent movie, you could be like, hey, guys, maybe we shouldn't release this right now. This is an important issue that I want out there. But right now, you know, culturally, it's not going to play rhetorically. It's not going to be as successful as it could. But no, he wanted to go ahead and release the movie, especially not just with the Harvey Weinstein stuff, but especially where the stuff about him was around the corner. Yeah. What has to be wrong with you as a person?
Yeah. A lot, apparently. Well, his apology, if you can call it that, his statement to EW reads, it's kind of creepy to me. I don't know. The way he talks about it. It's more unabashed Louis C.K. So continuing from that quote, these stories are true. At the time, I said to myself that what I did was okay because I never showed a woman my dick without asking first, which is also true. But what I learned later in life, too late, is that when you have power over another person, asking them to look at your dick isn't a question, it's a predicament for them. The power I had over these women is that they admired me, and I wielded that power irresponsibly. I have been remorseful of my actions, and I've tried to learn from them and run from them. Okay? Now I'm aware of the extent of the impact of my actions. I learned yesterday the extent to which I left these women who admired me feeling badly about themselves and cautious around other men who would never have put them in that position. One word, by the way, gentlemen, that is interestingly absent from this entire statement is the word sorry.
Yeah, it's because he's not.
Never appeared in this statement.
You should talk to Justin Bieber.
Is that a music joke? Because I don't get it. I'm just laughing uncomfortably.
Yeah, that's a music joke.
Uncomfortably, that's fine.
Oh, okay.
That's a music joke.
Okay.
That is interesting. I think unabashed is not quite. I see what you're getting at. But unabashed is not quite the word. It's more with Louis C.K. It's more along the lines of like, I'm willing to admit my shittiness on a level most people aren't, and I'm hoping that somehow makes it okay.
Yeah.
That's like the point of his comedy, practically.
That's like the theme of his comedy.
It is 100% the point of his comedy.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to...
And it shows up here, too. It's kind of funny. Like, at no point is he actually unabashed about it. He doesn't use the word sorry, which is interesting. But he, you know, the subtext of this is just kind of like, oh, well, as long as you admit to the wrongdoing, that sort of like washes it away to some extent. He's hoping to just kind of clear his conscience with the sorry without actually committing to doing things differently, it seems.
Well, I mean, there's a question of if he even thinks that he has to apologize, or if he's just making this statement because he's obligated to make a statement. Because this is the thing I want to ask about Louis C.K. in general, and about following him, and about people thinking he's a good comedian, and his show being heralded. To start with, we have to look at how fucked up this statement is beyond the lack of sorry. Like, you guys are 100% correct, that's fucked up. But also the fact that he's like, the power I had over these women is that they admired me. And that the industry admired me. It's like, fuck off. Nobody admired you. They just thought that you were their ticket to the top. They were placating you. This is all just a fucking game. This is the Hollywood game we saw with Harvey Weinstein. Nobody admired him. They just didn't think they could piss him off because of how entrenched he was in the industry. And it's the same thing here. It was, oh my God, it's Louis C.K. I don't, you know, maybe he's a fucking gross old man, but he can get me to the top and he can get me the famous, be famous because the meritocracy was dead in this industry. So the question I have in regards to this, where we're talking about an industry with the lack of meritocracy and we're just placating these people and kneeling and genuflecting to them, is I get to a certain extent the mentality of people trying to make it. You know, I get why people would keep silent and they would, you know, pretend Louis C.K. was funny and things like that. But why does the average audience member, and we see this across art and across movies, when I'm saying art, I want to specifically name movies, why does the average audience member buy into the myth that Louis C.K. is actually funny and actually has anything valid to say? I ask this because whenever I watched his show or his stand-up, I was revolted and my warning sirens in my head went off. Anytime I watched his show, I was like, this is the most depressing, depraved thing I've ever seen. This man has many, many problems and they do not belong on television. And then I even saw him at Oddball Fest one year when Bill Burr was the headliner, and that's why I went. And I believe he was making jokes about masturbating and how gross it was to clean up after you've ejaculated on yourself. And people were laughing at this as if this is funny. So, I mean, maybe it's a twofold question. Why do people continue to pretend this is funny? And if they do find it funny legitimately, why do they find it funny? And, you know, I'm going to posit an answer to that. Do they find it funny because on some level they identify with Louis C.K., where they hate themselves as much as Louis C.K. hates himself? And this is an example of the era of trauma that we're living in that Dr. Drew talks about. That's a lot there, but whatever you guys want to discuss. Oh, that's God. These are just my thoughts.
The philosophy of comedy. It's so fucking difficult. Why do you want to get into this?
I actually took a stab at philosophy of comedy at one point.
I do not want to discuss the philosophy of comedy. I want to discuss why, in general, people who are obviously very bad people continue to say they're good at what they do or continue to support them. This is even in movies as well.
Well, it has to...
Let me start.
Yeah. It goes down to, though, with what people find funny and why they find it funny, which is why I think you have to discuss philosophy of comedy to some bit, but...
Yeah.
I'll let James tackle that before I do anything.
Let me start with this. Like, I found Louis C.K. funny. There was some very legitimately funny things he said. Like, one thing that always stands out in my mind is his bit where he essentially induces the concept of a philosophic axiom during one of his bits, where his daughter keeps asking him why, daddy, and he eventually gets to the statement, because what isn't can never be. Things have to just be the way that they are, otherwise there'd be giant ants with top hats walking around. He's basically saying, like, if things weren't the way they were, then there'd be contradictions. And I just thought that was really funny, the idea of, like, you getting really stressed out at your daughter, like, digging into, like, an axiomatic concept. But that
wow,
being
James.
Said, what's that?
It's a whole new level of funny. Nerdy, but yeah.
Yeah, but I would also argue that, again, that's premised upon just, like, this negativity towards life. Like,
yes,
oh, my
is.
God, you're
yes.
annoyed that your daughter is curious intellectually? Fuck off. Like,
yeah,
like that's not I funny. Mean, like, don't have a fucking kid then if you can't deal with the curiosity of a child. I would love if I had a daughter and she was probing that deeply into philosophy.
I was able to laugh because I wasn't taking it that seriously. But I think if you take Louis C.K. as a whole, when you realize he has all these problems, and I was able to determine he had pretty bad psychological problems from the beginning listening to him, but I wasn't able to, I think Justin, your emotions were able to give you an insight into Louis C.K. that, like, for me at least, it didn't. I wasn't able to connect, you know, I mean, for example, I think now it's fairly clear that the reason he did that bit is because he is uncomfortable digging into deep questions, and he tries to use that discomfort as a source of comedy. And that comes out multiple times in interviews and bits, that he doesn't like thinking about things that are serious, but he knows he's supposed to, and so he tries to laugh that discomfort off.
I think that's completely fair, and actually something you just said just coalesced with something Daniel said early in the episode. If you remember, he went after Dane Cook for supposedly stealing his jokes earlier. Okay. Like, I mean, this was like 10 years ago. And Dane Cook was like, I never stole your jokes, but they were similar jokes. Well, seeing as how Dane Cook was dismissed as like a frat boy comic at a certain time, at a certain point, maybe Louis C.K. just hated Dane Cook deep down because Dane Cook was a good looking guy who I'm sure got lots of women and was more successful with similar jokes that Louis C.K. told, one or two that were similar. And there's a lot of hatred of the good in there with Louis C.K.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think there are many reasons why someone could find Louis C.K. funny. It doesn't make them a bad person for finding him funny. You know, yes. there are certainly the people who think he's funny because they identify with him. And those might be bad people. And that might be a majority. I have no idea. I'm not going to put percentages on this. But there is, has to be a significant percentage of people who find Louis C.K. funny because they think it's all an act. They think he's putting on a character who is a despicable person. And there, that happens all the time in movies and TV and whatever, where you laugh at this character because you think it is a character. We know now that it's probably not a character. Maybe you knew all along, Justin, and many, many people knew all along.
It was fairly obvious. Him and fucking Marc Maron. Like, I was like, why doesn't that, somebody not take these two out back and be like, guys, get your fucking act together. What the fuck is wrong with you?
But don't actually act together because you're terrible.
Yeah, I know. Well, no, I will say this. Marc Maron, they actually found, like, a role in Glow where his, like, sadness works because they're actually demonstrating why what's wrong with him is bad and why that's more naturalistic. Like, Glow is actually addressing some of these issues with using Marc Maron as an actor, so.
Hmm. Interesting. So, I think many people are just, some people are just more benevolent than they are skeptical, which is, oh, this comedian is so funny because he made up this really funny character named Louis C.K. the same way Larry the Cable Guy is not actually a cable guy who is a Southern redneck. he's actually like a Malibu guy who dresses in Armani suits and whatnot. But, you know.
K-Fab is dead, though. I mean, I agree with what you're saying. It's like professional wrestling. We're back in the day that you used to think like Ric Flair was actually that way and Hulk Hogan was actually that way. But with the advent of social media, to be able to keep that character going 24/7, 365, you have to question if it's an actual character or not.
I agree. People just don't.
I found myself just sort of confused as to where the character started and where the man began. And I didn't think about it too hard. But, like, you know, when you see things like, you know, him getting angry at his daughter for asking questions, I thought that part of this, the comedy of that is, like, that he's a horrible father for, like, part of the comedy is that he is, in fact, being a horrible father by being annoyed with her questions. But I think there's something sort of deep and complicated psychologically where he probably does get annoyed at those questions because it makes him think about deep things, which gives him anxiety. So he is actually annoyed with his daughter, and now he's laughing it off like, oh, you know, I'm such a prick for not entertaining my daughter's philosophical questions.
And exactly. Everything
and
you just said.
You understood that in your gut, I guess, Justin, whereas a lot of people would just say, like, ah, oh, lay off the man, Justin. It's just an act. He's just trying to be funny.
I agree with everything you just said, including the benevolence that people are giving towards him. But this is a great chance for me to explain something and explain why it's not even in my gut. It's a simple logical premise that I'm going to give to all of you so you can be as smart as me, everyone out there.
Wow. All right. Please bestow your wisdom upon us, Omar.
You're not even charging for this?
Oh, no. Go to patreon.com/themidside.
That's right.
No, this goes to a conversation I've had with Daniel about shows like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, or what's that show on Hulu, Terrible People? Is it even called Terrible People or something?
Difficult People.
Difficult People. Okay, Difficult People, Terrible People. Synonym people, right? Like, I get it. Like, I get the especially because you were saying it in this episode. Like, I get the concept. Like, these people are so bad, we're going to mock the concept of badness by laughing at these people. But this is what happens when I watch the show. I know that deep down, someone has to come up with those ideas to put them on TV to have you laugh at them. So I know that there's somebody out there who had to think of them. So there's somebody out there who's that fucked up. And every time I watch it, I go, man, there's somebody out there who's so fucked up that they thought of this shit. Like, okay, in It's Always Sunny, there's, you know, that play they do with, like, Nightman and Dayman, and there's the mm-hmm. line in it, it's like, you gotta pay the toll to get into this boy's hole. Like, that's what? Funny. Like, Nightman and Dayman, it's funny. The idea of Danny DeVito playing, like, a troll who's saying that, and, like, the line and the rhyme is funny because it's, like, really, really bad, and the fact that someone would write that in a musical, like, I get it. I get the comedy of it, and I do find that, like, funny on some level. Like, you gotta pay the toll to get into the boy's hole.
Okay, stop,
like,
saying it.
Hey, yeah, out of context, you're really making... Anyway, go on.
Well, okay, that's part of the point I'm making, by making it out of context. Because to me, I cannot drop the context of somebody wrote that line and came up with that line and was like, oh, let's make a joke about raping a little boy. Like, it's just... To me, there's somebody fucked up out there. You know, it's probably not the actors. Maybe it's not the entire writing staff. Maybe it's not the entire production staff. But somebody came up with that.
I think the actors write that show.
Maybe they do. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's why I get warning signs from Charlie Day, too, where some of his stuff is funny. But ultimately, I'm like, there's something really off about this guy. And so that's what I'm talking about, is that's why I can't find this shit funny. Like, I get the concept of wanting to laugh at bad people and, like, make them, you know, ineffective in reality by laughing at them through comedy. But the fact that somebody writes these shows and these movies and comes up with this stuff, all I can think about is there's somebody out there who this goes through their head, and then they want to put that in reality.
I have to reconsider that now. I always felt Always Sunny was a benevolent show because you are allowed to just simply mock evil and depravity without any reservations. Unlike, say, the show The Office, where you are made to feel sorry for a character like Michael Scott. There isn't a pure humor in The Office, whereas in Always
I don't
Sunny,
want to take that away from you.
Laughing at their stupidity.
I don't want to take that away from you. I don't think it's as simple as what I'm saying or what you and Daniel are saying. What I'm saying is I think that most of the people involved with it are on your guys' side, where they're saying it's safe and it's benevolent to mock these people. But there's someone involved with that show somehow who's coming up with that stuff. And that's what's crazy to me. So I think it's both.
I don't know. It's
sense.
Not that hard to come up with that stuff. You just take whatever problems you have, reject them in order to produce the benevolent premise of the show, and then amplify them a bunch for comedic purpose. Like, I could easily see someone doing that and still being relatively healthy.
I would put it one other way, which is that I get your point, Justin, and it's more pointed when you have someone like Louis C.K. who's writing his own bits, performing his own bits, etc.
Oh, yeah. Louis C.K. is more extreme than It's Always Sunny. I don't want to say that they are all, like, sexual predators or whatever on It's Always Sunny. I'm just giving an example. Like, Louis C.K. is an extreme.
Yeah. My point is that it gets harder in the shows that have mixed writers because it's also just a matter of has a writer observed this thing in reality somewhere?
Yes, that's true too.
Know, and they could just be mocking it. So it's complicated, and Always Sunny in Philadelphia is a weird one for me because I just don't find it funny at all. People tell me it's the best comedic show on television, and I try to watch it. I don't like it. Something a sense of life thing. I have no idea. I just hate Philadelphia. The Eagles. I have no idea. It's something.
Part of the show is hating Philadelphia.
They booed Santa Claus.
That's right. They booed goddamn Santa Claus at a football game. So.
No, but here's the sum up for this story. Guys, listen to the warning signs in your head, the warning sirens. And if, like, somebody is bad, just fucking don't. Like, you only have a limited amount of time. You only have a limited amount of money. And if somebody is bad, think about if you want to give that person your time and your money. Louis C.K. was not deserving of our time and our money. And I would say, you know, I'm going to say something controversial here. I get same warning signs from Amy Schumer. So.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Not Amy Schumer. Yeah, she's pretty fucking terrible. Amy Schumer. Speaking of women who are terrible, a teenage girl posed for 8 years as a married man to write about baseball and harass women. This is a farce story for the ages.
This isn't even... Keep going.
All right. I'm going to set this story up, and then I'm basically just going to underhand lob it to Justin so that he can knock it out of the park here.
It's baseball, not softball, you fucking pussy.
Whatever. You can underhand a baseball. We may be playing T-ball. Or not T-ball, but like, what's after T-ball? Pee-wee something? I don't know. I stopped
when
we started pitching.
Do me a favor, when you have kids, like, have somebody else teach them sports.
I played baseball, believe it or not, up until literally the first game of the year when kids started pitching to each other, and I was beaned three times in the same game, and I literally said, fuck it, and I walked away from the field. I was so pissed off.
To be fair, is that because, like, you took up the entire strike zone?
No, thank you very much.
Hashtag fat joke.
Hashtag fat joke. But no, I was actually a very fairly good baseball player. That was the only way I found the sport interesting at all. I couldn't even watch it on TV. It was so boring. But anyway, this has nothing to do with any of that. For the last 8 years, baseball fan turned writer Becca Schultz has presented herself online as Ryan Schultz, a false identity she assumed when she was 13 years old, duping and harassing women on Twitter along the way. On Wednesday night, a woman named Erin tweeted a series of screenshots announcing that Schultz is not actually Ryan, a married father of two studying to be a pharmacist. Instead, Schultz is a 21-year-old college student in the Midwest whose entire career as an aspiring baseball writer has been under a fraudulent byline. Schultz has been contributing to Baseball Prospect's local White Sox blog at the end of the 2016 season and wrote for PB Southside and BP Wrigleyville throughout the 2017 season. Schultz's fraud was as true to the catfish genre as can be. She told the people who discovered she was not who she said she was, that she assumed the identity because she felt as if she couldn't write about baseball professionally as a woman, especially at the age of 13. As the deception went on, she couldn't figure out how to get out of the middle of her web of lies. Over time, Ryan formed serial relationships with women who used Twitter to talk about baseball and hockey. Some women told me that he could get drunk and berate them. Others told me they felt emotionally abused and manipulated because he would imply that he'd hurt himself if they didn't continue to talk to him. Ryan received nudes from at least two women I spoke with, one of whom said she did it because she was afraid that he would hurt himself if she didn't. Justin, huh? These are people on the internet doing this?
Well, yes, and this is what I always complain about and I always rant about. This is why I hate...
You always rant about women?
Hate, not women. Shut the fuck up.
No. I don't know. I was about to say, you always rant about it when stuff like this happens. Oh, this happened again.
Yes, this is more frequent than you realize.
Really?
This is why I hate anonymity on the internet. I absolutely despise it. Because people can get away with doing this kind of stuff, and people engage with these people as if someone who's being anonymous on the internet is engaging with you in a fair and equal trade. Because they're not. There's a level of disrespect to you when people are choosing to be anonymous. Because they're saying, you're not important enough for me to deal with in reality. I'm going to hide myself so I can get what I want out of the interaction. One of the funniest things about the story, which, by the way, this story is the farce of the year to me. So in the year-end award show, Midsiders, I expect to see this one voted as the farcical story of the year. Not to, like, bias the voting or anything, but I'm completely trying to bias the voting. If the funniest thing to me about this story is if you read the comments, people making fun of her false identity, where everyone's like, oh, by the way, I'm fake too, blah, blah, blah. It's like they're trying to deflect from the fact that they're all going to look like assholes now if you apply this principle of the anonymity thing. I mean, Daniel, you may not want to name the name, but I don't particularly care because to me it's probably a fake name, but I'm still going to leave it up to you. You put a comment, a screenshot of a comment in our thread this week of a anonymous poster, anonymous Facebook profile from the objectivist community in there. And my first response was like, have you ever met this person in real life? And you said no. And I was like, just block him then.
Yeah. I don't care. We're not friends. I mean, he's just a random person in the objectivist community, as far as I know, who's just... The reason I posted that is because his comments are just always so obnoxious. And it's one of these things where it's like he puts on objectivist face is what it feels like every time he makes a comment. You know, whenever an objectivist comments and the word qua appears in the comment, I'm immediately skeptical of everything they
Justin,
have to say.
I hate the word qua.
Word.
This is why I hate the word qua, though. This is nobody fucking uses it right. It's a pretentious bullshit thing. But yes, I mean, the guy's name is Klaus, if that's really his name. We're talking about the fish from American Dad.
Wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. That was going to be my subtle.
I mean, any objectivists listening know who we're talking about now.
Right.
By the way.
Right.
So if you wanted to keep that anonymous, like, okay, it's out now. I don't think he's anonymous. He just doesn't have pictures of himself.
I don't believe that's a real name. There's no reason for me to believe it's a real name.
There's evidence it's a real name.
I don't believe it. I'm sorry. Until it's proven to me.
Here's the evidence, is that he drew the cover for Harry Binswanger's epistemology book, and Harry Binswanger named him as Klaus Nordby.
So
in the
this
book,
girl
he said,
received
thank you to Klaus Nordby for the title.
Mark
this
Twain.
Girl,
Mark Twain. This, Mark Twain. Mark
Twain. Mark Twain. And yeah. Even in this article, Becca Schultz received checks as Ryan Schultz, and the bank cashed it because it was close enough because they had the same last name. So people are not vigilant enough about this stuff, and that's why I'm bringing up the example of this person. Because, Daniel, you're 100% correct. I'm actually going to push it another level further. It's not he's putting on objectivist face. He's putting on self face. And what I mean by that is
meta face.
Meta face, yeah. Meta face. The meta face edition. No, it's not that at all. But it's the Louis C.K. edition. But no, what he's doing is he's going online and he's hiding the parts of himself he doesn't want the world to see. And he's exaggerating the parts of himself that he does want the world to see, which makes it even more disturbing that these anonymous profiles act in this way. I mean, think about this girl in the story, right? It's the same thing as the internet commenters who are anonymous, or Twitter eggs, or Klaus, as we're talking about. That's her idea of what a man is? To berate these women and manipulate them into sending her nudes? And to, you know, just be abusive towards these people? And it's the same thing. Like, Klaus is just a dick for no reason. And the internet commenters are dicks for no reason. Like, it's disturbing.
Yeah, I, from the very beginning, took the exact opposite approach on the internet. Well, not the very beginning. The very beginning was teenage Daniel in chat rooms annoying people to death. But when I started to become serious, you know, I don't know, high school? That's right. I was a fast maturer. Everything online for me was completely and utterly my actual name. All of my accounts are at Daniel T. Richards. My website is Daniel T. Richards. My email is drichards@gmail.com. All of you know that, because we do not that D. Richards on the show. I've been completely open about my identity on the internet, and partially that was because I understood the value of my ethos, and I wanted people to be able to know that I had a good character and be able to trust me, and so I thought in the age of anonymity, what better way to do that than to be completely transparent about who you are and what you do on the internet. And that served me well, by the way. I've had employers talk about, like, oh yeah, we Googled you and it's all great. Like, how did that happen?
It was by accident. It was just completely by accident. But that's what's disturbing, Daniel. You had employers Google you and they were like, oh, this is a good guy. He's not anonymous. I know who he is. I can verify that. But people hired this woman in this story to write for their sites. And then these are the things that get reported on, and the echo chamber increases itself, and just there's a further echo because somebody who's an anonymous profile and acting in this way has become a writer because, as they said in the story, the editors are too lazy because they're not even really being paid that much. And it's just, to me, this entire story reveals everything that's wrong with the internet and internet journalism.
Yeah.
Something on I can say about internet anonymity, the only case I can think where internet anonymity wasn't used for some sort of nefarious end is a person who's actually on my podcast often, whose name will remain anonymous, because he is a college student and doesn't want his opinions associated with his own name because he's afraid that he won't be eligible for certain college programs and stuff because of his anti-SJW statements he's made. So sure. He goes by the pseudonym Chad Jordan.
Yeah. And I think Justin and I would probably both agree, and I'll ask Justin in a moment. I won't speak for him and assume what he would say, but like, there are cases, of course, where anonymity is completely appropriate and, in fact, a positive, not only on the internet, but everywhere. In journalism and in media and all sorts of things. But for the most part, the easy access to anonymity on the internet makes it so that people can take advantage of any given situation, or they can do the things they wouldn't otherwise do because actually social pressure is a force for good in many ways. That's right, I said it. Kick me out of the movement. Anyway, Justin?
No, you just nailed it 100% with your last statement when you said, because of the easy access to anonymity, people would do things they wouldn't normally do. I agree completely. Anonymity has its role in society. Sometimes it's important to protect sources. You know, if we had protected some of the sources in the Harvey Weinstein case, maybe the shit would have come out earlier. We have a thing called the Witness Protection Program for this reason. These are all very good, good things. But because it's so easy access, we have people like Chad Jordan. Sorry, James, I'm going to be harsh to Chad Jordan right now, but Chad Jordan is a fucking pussy. And what I mean by that is, what is more important to you? Is it more important to go to school and get a degree from these people? Or is it more important to stand by the values that you care about so deeply that you have to have a podcast to talk about them? And what I'm talking about here is what Daniel's talking about because of the easy access to things. Back in the day where there was no easy access, he would have had to have made a decision where he would have said, do I go to school and keep my mouth shut and get this degree so in the long run I can say what I want? Or are these people so evil that I'm not going to participate in this community? Instead, he's trying to do both at the same time by being anonymous. Don't you think I know that somebody could listen to this show one day and be like, wow, the shit this guy says is crazy. Like, I have that fear. When I started dating Christine and she started listening to this.
Yeah,
wait till we get to Reddit, exactly. When I started dating Christine and she was listening to this, I was like, how has she not decided I'm crazy? Like, why is she still, like, talking to me? Like, because a lot of people would find a lot of what I say, even though I think it's pretty rational, the fact that I just dismiss someone as a pussy, people would be like, what's wrong with this guy? But that's exactly Daniel's point that I think is 100% correct. The internet and anonymity has made it so people can do things they wouldn't normally do and not make decisions they wouldn't normally make. Don't go on a podcast if you're worried it's going to ruin your life. Like, straight up.
I mean, that part, I agree with what you're saying, but of course, when I have him on my show, I let him make that decision, even though I disagree with that part of it.
Sure.
The other part of his decision is just that he's relatively young and doesn't necessarily trust his ability to make statements he's going to stand by forever and ever.
Well, that's another problem with the internet. The idea everything we say is frozen in time and it has to always represent us forever.
Yeah, I mean, but until the culture changes, that's going to be a reality. And, you know, there's some things I've posted on the internet that I wish I could remove permanently. Not because they were necessarily bad things to say, but because if you look at them taken out of context, you know, it doesn't look good.
Well, let me do something else that'll get me booted from the movement here, which is, quote, Gandhi, don't we have to be the change we want to see in the world, James? Don't we have to actually live the lives that we want the culture to reflect?
Yeah, that was always the one quote from
Gandhi. In Chad's case, he's not sure what he believes in yet.
Yeah, I'm not ripping on poor Chad. Chad, I hope you're a listener.
Fuck,
we don't actually hate you.
Chad is a midsider, by the way, actually. He's probably listening. I just realized he does listen to this.
Look,
so.
Chad now hates
Chad
me.
Chad is a midsider.
Chad, we love you. You're welcome on all of our podcasts. It's just we hate everything you stand for. That's all. We like you, just not anything you do or say.
Look, you can come on the midside, but just be aware that if you come on the midside, I'm just going to fucking badger you about being anonymous over and over again. Like,
Look,
if you
Chad.
Listen to the show, you know who I am by now, and you know
also,
that I'm this way. Like,
who chooses the name Chad? If you're going to be anonymous.
We actually chose it together because we thought it would be funny to give him the douchiest name possible.
I was going to say,
okay, so
there's
two things
ironic
about that.
Chad.
First of all, Daniel is making that joke very tongue-in-cheek. There's a Twitter
Justin's
account
about
out
to
there
read
that
95 levels deep of psychologizing here into choosing the name Chad. Is everyone ready? Okay.
First of all, I'm not reading 95 levels deep. There is a Twitter account that I don't know if you want to reveal, a joke account that has the name Chad. No? Yeah. Okay. Well, if you guys find that one, you'll know why Daniel's making the joke about who makes the uses the word Chad. But that's also, right. On Reddit, the incels, so the involuntary celibate, and like even on the short subreddit, Chad is the name they use to derisively talk about men that get women, and the one that they say are genetically superior, and they're the ones that just women just want automatically. So that's why it's funny he chose the word Chad too. Yes.
Interesting.
They'll be like fucking Chads who are 6 feet tall and go to the gym and women love. Like, that's the kind of shit they say. It's literally the name they chose.
Huh. Chad.
So no psychologizing there at all. That was simply explicating two facts of reality. Fuck you.
All right. Well, the reason we initially chose that name is because we both wanted to sort of look douchey in our video that we made called the Chad Jordan Social Justice Hour, where it was just this continuous, like continuous stream of leftist horseshit that we could, we wrote this script that just included as many leftist buzzwords as we possibly could, and we squeezed it into a 9-minute period of just ranting in the worst possible leftist way possible. And we thought it'd be really funny if we both wore polo shirts and aviator sunglasses while doing it.
Very nice.
So you basically just stole the gimmick of PC Principle from South Park. That's all you did.
We put our own spin on it, but yeah, there was definitely that aspect to it, for sure.
That's right. I'm going to call an on-air audible here, and let's say skip the really depressing story. I think we're in a good, upbeat mood. I'd like to not talk about the worst mass shooting in history. So if we can move past that, I'm sure all of you...
Second worst, right?
Yeah, let's skip right to Trump! That's right.
Trump-a-dump.
Because that's not depressing in its own.
Right.
It's a CNN politics story. Ex-Trump security chief testifies that he rejected a 2013 Russian offer of women for Trump in Moscow. President Trump's longtime confidant Keith Schiller privately testified that he rejected a Russian offer to send 5 women to the then private citizen Trump's hotel during the 2013 trip to Moscow for the Miss Universe pageant, according to multiple sources. Schiller, Trump's former bodyguard and personal aide, testified that he took the offer as a joke, two of the sources said. On their way up to Trump's hotel room that night, Schiller told the billionaire businessman about the offer, and Trump laughed it off. Schiller told the House Intelligence Committee earlier this week. After several minutes outside of Trump's door, Schiller's practice as Trump's security guard, he then left. So, Justin... wouldn't you expect serial rapist President Donald Trump to be, you know, grabbing some up in there if he was offered 5 women in Moscow in 2013?
You are clearly my best friend because you knew exactly where I wanted to go with this story. Thank you for that beautiful setup. I also want to applaud you for your use of the word audible, which about like 8 years ago, you probably wouldn't have been able to use that word. And look, the word audible makes sense. And it is a valid concept. So good job on that.
Thank you.
I appreciate that.
8 years ago, I would have been referring to the free book, audiobook podcast, or whatever it is, app, Audible. But yes, now it's football reference. It's amazing.
Yeah, that was also in an in-joke comment, if anyone's read the short script I wrote called Audible.
That's right.
A couple of midsiders out there have read that. But that's the thing. The thing you just said about the story is 100% what I want to say. Trump's reaction of laughing. Now, we have to look at this in the context of what everything is going on in our society. So we have this group of people, and Harvey Weinstein is part of that, and Louis C.K. is part of that, and they're telling us how horrible of a human being Donald Trump is. Now, I'm not even going to put a disclaimer in here about the fact that I don't support Trump, because it's not relevant right now, and I don't feel the need to constantly apologize for saying anything positive about the man. And these are the people who are committing these acts of sexual assault and sexual misconduct and whatever else words we want to use next to the word sexual, but they are not dealing with sex in a healthy way. And then Trump came out and he was mocking the fact that women would throw themselves at him. And he said, you know, they let you grab them by the pussy. Not saying he did, but that he's saying, wow, isn't it absurd that they would let me? Notice he was talking to somebody in the Hollywood industry at the time when he said that. Now the comments make even more sense. And it makes even more sense why people were attacking him for those comments, because he was mocking them. That was a joke by Trump. He was calling them out on their shit. That's why they got so upset at it. Because look, the same thing happened to Trump. Literally, the situation happens. Five women are offered to him. He knew that was a serious offer. He wasn't laughing because the offer was a joke. He was laughing because in reality, somebody made that offer and thought a man of integrity would take that.
Trump's the man of integrity, yes.
In this ca-
Justin, come on.
In this case, yes. In this case, yes. Okay? He lies, he does. And we saw his tweet about to Kim Jong-un where he's negging Kim Jong-un on Twitter. Like, dude, like, we know Trump lies all the time. We know he fucks with the truth. We know he's a narcissist. But in this case, this is an act of integrity. Him.
Well, what I'll say slightly differently, Justin, is that there's, you know, for all the negative things that Trump has done, for as much of a D-bag as he is,
yes,
there's actually no evidence in his history to suggest that, like, he's been horrible to women, or, like, that he's cheated a bunch, slept around, molested people, whatever it is, which is, like, you'd expect someone like him to be totally doing that, and someone like, I don't know, Harvey Weinstein not? I don't know, maybe, I have no idea. But it's really not the case. Like, it might be the one area where he has some amount of integrity, which is weird. So,
well, that's all I'm saying. 100% of what you just said, especially because of the story we're told about Donald Trump, you would especially expect what you said to be true, that he would be one of these serial philanderers, that he would be using his power. But again, that's projection by the people telling this story about Trump. And look, he's not the one who told this story, right? There's not a quote from Trump saying he laughed about it. It's the bodyguard saying Trump laughed about it, correct? This is all quotes from the bodyguard. Am I wrong?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm believing the bodyguard. I'm not believing Trump. If Trump came out and was like, oh, these five women came in and I rejected all of them, blah, blah, I'd be like, okay, he's bullshitting. But the fact that this is another person observing this, and in today's day and age actually saying this, you know, when you can... you're at risk of being destroyed by the media for saying anything that seems positive about Trump. That's who I'm believing. And that's all I'm saying. All I'm saying is question what you're being told and why people are telling the narratives they're telling. Because this goes against the narrative of what Trump is and who the people in Hollywood are, and that they're the moral people and that Trump isn't. And again, I'm going to say the disclaimer. I agree with what Daniel's saying. He's a douchebag narcissist and I'm not a Trump fan. I'm just saying at this time, in this one thing with what's going on in the world, we have to acknowledge the reality of it.
Yeah. And to be fair, he may have cheated on one of his wives. But
we have no evidence.
I think the reality is far from clear. I don't believe his security guard. I don't believe anyone who would choose to associate with Trump on this level, on the level that this security guard did. Like, Trump has all of the markers psychologically of someone who would behave exactly like Louis C.K. That doesn't mean he's guilty of anything, of course, but I just don't buy it.
I don't agree that he has all the markers of someone who would behave like Louis C.K. Do you really think Donald Trump would bring women to his apartment, office, wherever he's staying, hotel room, and be like, hey, do you guys want to watch me masturbate, and then take his dick out and just proceed to get naked?
I mean, that would not be his mode. His mode would be more along the line of, like, you know, it would be something else sexually. But he occurs to me as someone with low enough self-esteem that he would want to sleep with as many women as possible to assuage that low self-esteem. I mean, he's president in order to assuage his low self-esteem. So it's not hard to imagine he would seek sex to assuage it as
well. You know, I will buck both of you and basically just say this, which is I'm not going to, you know, discuss what his self-esteem is and whether or not he's the kind of man who would have those things. It's a thing where, you know, he's the president of the United States. He was the most hated candidate maybe of all time for the Republican Party. Where is any evidence? Where are the massive accusers? Where are the, you know, where is it? You know, with Harvey Weinstein, we have evidence. With Louis C.K., we have accounts. And, you know, with Kevin Spacey, we have people coming back from 30 years ago saying these things. Where is this stuff with Donald Trump? He's the most prominent man in the country. Like, I don't know. James?
I mean, it occurs to me that he's just really good at covering his tracks. Like, Hillary is, considering all of the wrongdoings that there's evidence she committed, and she's gotten away with it time and time again. So it occurs to me as possible that Trump is like that. Now, that's not to find him guilty of anything, of course, but you know, to psychologize Trump in the way I did is no less obvious than the way we just psychologized Louis C.K. It's just it's plain for all to see.
Well, his the, lack the of difference,
it's James, not because Louis C.K. talks about these things publicly and Trump doesn't. And that's the difference. Psychology is a complex thing. Yeah, I agree Trump has self-esteem issues, but it's possible to have self-esteem issues in certain venues and be highly confident in other venues.
Sure. But, you know, it's just, I don't think there's evidence to say, like, oh, well, he's definitely innocent of these things.
I don't think there's, but isn't that... James.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
I mean,
the whole point is, like,
yeah,
there's no evidence to suggest that he's
he
not.
He asserts the positive, of course. Yeah. Like, I'm not saying he did it. I'm just saying he didn't. We don't know. He's I mean, he's just, he is a man who does not care about the truth. And someone who's like that is capable of anything, really.
I guess. I mean, I don't disagree with you in principle, but in the particulars of this case, you know, we've seen all the things that have come out against him in any number of other areas about taxes and Russia dealings and whatever, and it just seems to me that there would be more evidence if he was a serial sexual assaulter in the vein of Weinstein or, I don't know, Bill Clinton. Like,
yeah.
I mean, even he was the most powerful man in the country, and we still found out about BJ's in the Oval Office and cigars and whatnot. And I just, especially in the modern era, I can't imagine we wouldn't have more evidence if that was the case.
I agree, but I see all of the things you're saying there as more of an impugnment of the left, not a count in favor of Donald Trump.
I look at it as, I would like to hang my hat on one positive thing about the man who's running the biggest nuclear arsenal in the entire world.
That's all it was.
It was
like, I don't want to be put in the unenviable position here of defending Donald Trump because I don't want to be construed in that way at all. And I don't want people to think I'm a supporter at all. It's just like, that's the point. It's just to question the narratives. And
yeah, like I said, this goes against the left because they don't care about truth either. So.
Yeah, the most interesting thing about this story, actually, on thedailynews.com is that the sidebar most popular articles, one of them is Long Island man busted for sexually abusing two horses. Just want to put that out there. Two horses!
Two horses.
All right, well, he abused two horses. I think maybe we can stop beating this dead horse. Yeah, are we ready to move on?
Nice.
Yes.
All right, it's time for The Hole for Romantic with JML. In Hollywood right now, we're seeing sort of a lot of issues with the mainstream, not just with everything that's going on the production side of things, but also on the artistic side of things, where we've talked at length here about the issues with the naturalism that exists and the watered-down movies that exist. So for this week for the review, I went to see a small indie film that has a non-wide release. It's a very limited release. Have you guys heard of the movie My Friend Dahmer?
Whoa. Like Jeffrey?
Yes, it's a movie about Jeffrey Dahmer as a teenager. It's apparently based on a book that somebody who went to school with him wrote.
Hmm.
So neither of you have heard of it?
No.
Okay, well, I will summarize this in a second, but I want to start off by saying with one of my biggest problems with the entertainment industry as a whole is that the only thing that is worse than mainstream film is independent film. And this movie is an example of it. So this movie is basically the Jeffrey Dahmer prequel we never knew we wanted and didn't actually want. So this movie is all about how Jeffrey Dahmer was super awkward in high school. He found roadkill and dissolved it in acid. He escalated to killing animals. Apparently, did you guys know Jeffrey Dahmer was gay and only killed men?
I don't. Maybe had heard that at some point, but I'd forgotten it. If I quote unquote knew it.
But. Right. So this is all about how he was repressed in high school and he was actually gay and it was all setting that up. And the whole movie shows all of these things. It shows how he sort of made himself a comedic act by acting like he had seizures and mental retardation, and that made everyone think he was funny. And then literally the movie culminates when he picks up the hitchhiker right before he kills him. And this is after he's graduated from high school and everything. It goes into everything. It shows his relationship with his parents. But it's just... I'm watching this movie, and I'm like 20 minutes in. And I lean over to Christine, and I go, this movie has no story. There's no plot. It's just a bunch of events happening. If I did not know who Jeffrey Dahmer was, I would just be like, why am I watching like a weird kid in high school be weird? Like, there's no conflict. There's nothing anyone's trying to achieve. There's nothing at stake. It's just, oh, this guy's weird and he's going to become a serial killer. Let's look at it. And it's not even done particularly well to show how he's going to become that. Don't get me wrong. The acting is good. The kid, guy who plays young Jeffrey Dahmer achieves it. His dad achieves it. The other actors play their roles. It's just... the overall writing of it is just very, very poor. So to give a brief summary, I always want to start doing now the why you should and shouldn't see this movie. Why you should see this movie is if you can't access any of Bates Motel to see a prequel story about a young boy becoming a serial killer, or you want to be reminded of why Bates Motel is really, really good, why you shouldn't see this movie... if you can watch Bates Motel or even any show like Mindhunter on Netflix. All right, let's move on and let's talk about some things that are upcoming.
Trailer takedown. First trailer.
Sherlock Gnomes is an animated feature. Yes, exactly. It's a movie based entirely on a dad pun. Dad joke.
Yeah, that's such a good way of putting it.
I think it's a sequel. I don't know, Daniel, and his expertise of animated movies.
It's a sequel to Gnomeo and Juliet.
Oh, my dog.
They move to a new garden, and in there, there's something wrong. I still don't really know quite what's wrong. Maybe someone went missing or something. But for some reason, Sherlock Gnomes, who's exactly what you think, he's a garden gnome who looks and acts like Sherlock Holmes, comes and tries to solve the case. And then there's a lot of, like, inappropriate humor for children. Right. Like, the fart so joke weird. Where it kept going. Like, okay, he jumped, the gnome jumps in the mud pit and farts once. And then everyone's like, come on. Or the one guy's like, come on. And then he farts, like, three more times. And then
remarks that it's a jacuzzi.
Yeah, exactly. And then the no ship Sherlock joke. Where Sherlock's like, we're going to need a ship to get across. And somebody goes, no ship, Sherlock, which is obviously a reference to no shit, Sherlock. And then at the end, what was that? That one gnome was in like the Borat outfit. Do you know what I'm talking about? Where Borat's wearing like that very, very small singlet, which barely covers his junk and is basically a thong in the back. And there's a gnome wearing that. I don't know what the point of this movie is. I don't know who the audience is for this movie. I know, like, we have a lot of animated movies coming out that make a lot of money. I mean, even the Emoji Movie made money. So, I don't know, maybe we're in, like, a golden age of animated movies. But this is, like, this is...
Golden age of animated movies meant to corrupt the minds of young children.
We're in a golden shower age of animated movies at the moment. No one asked for this. No one wants it. It's terrible.
So, yes, obviously, based upon everything Daniel just said and everything I'm saying, I am just tackling this out of, like, confusion.
I was embarrassed just to watch this trailer, and then I got a literal, like, horrible feeling in the pit of my stomach when they said that fucking Johnny Depp is voicing the Sherlock gnome. I just thought, my God, how the mighty have fallen. What a tremendous piece of crap he assigned his name onto.
When I saw the cast for this, including Johnny Depp, I go, this is the problem when you give these people money and just let them make whatever fucking movie, they just throw money at dumb projects.
if there is any positive thing to say about this movie, and I'm very reluctant to say anything positive because I don't want anyone to construe positivity as an endorsement, this movie is shit. Do not watch it. It is fucking terrible. But if there's one positive thing to say, it's that they did a beautiful job animating the concrete gnome statues.
I noticed that.
The detail in the concrete is unbelievably good. So take one frame, look at that frame, be amazed at how good the animation is, and then take that frame, drag it to your trash can, and then set your trash can on fire. Tackle!
I thought you were talking about like a metaphorical trash can on your desktop. Is there a feature where I can make my desktop trash can light on fire?
Well, I was mixing the metaphors here for comedic effect, which is...
Okay, yeah. Okay.
I'm sorry you're just not there with my humor.
Have you seen Romeo and Juliet?
No. Looks, it's also fucking garbage. Yeah.
James?
So, like you, Justin, I was also just confused by this movie. And Daniel, like you, I liked the gnomes in the concrete, but not in the abstract. Tackle.
Second trailer.
The Post is a journalist hero movie starring Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks. This is set during the Vietnam War, when apparently the New York Times is leaking classified information. And then they're told they can't do it anymore. I guess they're going to the Supreme Court. And then Meryl Streep is in charge of the Washington Post, I think. And they're trying to figure out whether they should publish this information or not. My thing with this is, like, how many more journalist hero movies do we need? Like, oh my god, Vietnam was evil and we need to discover that the government was lying about it and blah, blah, blah. And... you know, I'm okay with, like, exposing government lies and all of that. It's just, I'm just sick of these movies. And, like, it's like they threw all the actors in that are supposed to be good, like Meryl Streep, Tom Hanks, Bradley Whitford. And it's just, like, I don't know. There's nothing appealing to me about this movie. Maybe, Daniel, this appeals to you, but just tackle.
You know, I'm a sucker for any movie that involves government and conspiracy and whatnot. So there's that appeal to it. It was so funny because I was like, wait, is this a new movie? I thought this movie came out already. And then I realized, oh, this is just taking the success of Spotlight, the 2015 movie about the Boston Globe uncovering the Catholic Church scandal, and just updating it for a new plot, new characters. But it's the same formula. Newspaper fights big entity, almost gets crushed, but wins in the end. If it's on Netflix, I'll watch it, but I'm tackling the actual premiere of this, certainly.
This looked interesting to me, for all the reasons that have been mentioned so far, positively, but I'm just worried it's just going to be a big leftist self-masturbation festival about how moral masturbation, about how good we all are, how virtuous we all are. So, I don't know. I guess... Tackle.
They're not even asking us first before they just whip it out in front of us.
That's ridiculous. True.
They've been doing that for years.
Yeah.
So, this one I liked in the abstract, but not in the concrete.
Okay, thank you.
Third trailer.
Speaking of Hollywood just masturbating in front of us and us being okay with it, Matt Damon has released another movie, or is going to release another movie, telling you how horrible Damon. Your suburban life is.
What is it with him lately and just fucking ripping on suburban life? I don't know.
Downsizing is a movie where, and I don't even understand how the economics of this work. I'm guessing that because you're so small, scarcity decreases. But apparently, if you lower yourself to 5 inches, and I'm talking about your overall height, ladies and gentlemen, and you allow yourself to be shrunk to 5 inches, your life can get better because you can afford everything. Matt Damon and his wife, Kristen Wiig, which probably the most unbelievable part of this entire trailer was that he was married to Kristen Wiig, decide that they are going to downsize themselves. Except when they do, Kristen Wiig backs out because... we need another reason to hate Kristen Wiig. And Matt Damon is the only one who has shrunk himself down to 5 inches, and he must start his life over. I can't do this. I'm tackle.
Tackle.
I think this movie was either written. The concept here would be an interesting sci-fi plot if it was done
exactly
as a sci-fi movie. But it's not done that way, which is strange. It's done as this, midlife crisis movie, this exploration of post-divorce life kind of movie. And it makes no fucking sense to do it that way. It's almost as if the downsizing thing is not really necessary to the story.
Right.
So for that reason alone, fucking tackle.
Tackle.
Think of good ideas, but actually put them, you know, this is interesting concept, but you didn't execute it well. I don't know. I agree
that this would be a good sci-fi premise. I liked that. I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then I was like, oh,
this might make this one shitty good episode of Black Mirror.
Right.
But yes, that's it. Yeah.
I liked, I agree that this is a good premise. But this is just oozes from every one of its tiny little pores the human helplessness pact that Justin always talks about, or to put it in my formulation, it represents the D mentality, the deterministic sense of life. So tackle. Bye.
Final trailer.
In the Fade is a foreign language film about a woman who is married to a Middle Eastern / Arabic / Islamic. I'm not sure if he's actually Islamic. Maybe somebody can clear that up for me, Daniel. Guy, and then her son and the husband are killed in a bombing, and then the rest of it is supposed to be like a thriller where they're trying to find out who actually killed him or not, and I guess it's neo-Nazis. I don't know, the trailer wasn't really clear. Like, is it actually neo-Nazis, or is this like a false like thing that they're saying neo-Nazis did it? I don't know, but then she gets really angry at the neo-Nazis, and it's all about her anger at the world, and I don't know. I just thought this movie was already done in that Jodie Foster one where she was married to Saeed from Lost, and then she watches Saeed get killed, and she becomes the vigilante.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that movie.
Yeah, I just thought it was, what was it called, The Brave One or whatever?
It's like, kind of that movie.
Yeah, The Brave One.
Yeah, I just thought this was already done. It was already done better, and this just has a European sensibility to it. I would not be surprised if this movie is heralded as some genius thing and it wins the Oscar for best foreign language film or whatever. But for me, tackle.
Tackle.
I get really uncomfortable watching German people scream 9. I don't know.
I had the same reaction. I was like, you hate neo-Nazis, but then you say you're German and you scream 9. It just didn't come across well to me.
I like how James went for the math joke and Justin went for the Nazi joke. And that pretty much sums up our relationship. So, kind of interesting. I don't know. The acting seemed really good. She seemed like a tremendous actress. Hard for me. I've become such a goddamn millennial. Hard for me to watch subtitled movies because I look away from the screen too much. I go to the phone or I go to my computer or whatever. And so now it's like, oh, I have to actually sit down and watch this movie and read simultaneously. Pass. The last movie that held my interest though, that was subtitled was, James, help me with the title. The Lives of Other People. Other People's Lives.
The Lives of Others.
The Lives of Others. Thank you. I just, too many words. The Lives of Others, which is about, East Berlin, East Germany. God, I'm terrible at this game. Basically about how
9
communists were spying on all their citizens. So, tackle. That's what I wanted to say. That was a long way of saying tackle.
Tackle.
This movie looks like it could be interesting, but then it's kind of like, it's just like so many other movies we review here that the premise is interesting enough, but then in the culture we're in, I just expect to be bombarded with leftist crap, basically. So,
all right.
Tackle, I guess.
I'm going to play a quick game with you. Since we all tackled every movie, I want to play the game of if someone put a gun to your head and made you watch one of these movies, which would it be?
Okay, I like that. But before I answer that question, I want to say two things. One, I think we need a sound effect that, like, when we tackle everything, it goes off, and then we play that game. Also, we should have a super special sound effect if someday we actually hug all of them.
Oh, man. It's like rainbows and sunshine and unicorns. And
There's never been one where we all hugged every movie. It's never happened.
I think there's been one where I hugged everything, but yeah, not where we all
hugged. Yeah, we've all
everything.
Individually had one where we've hugged all of them, but it's never been together we have all hugged it. There are a couple times it's we've all tackled.
It should be some version of Kumbaya. Should go off. We all hug everything, but yeah. So someone puts a gun to your head and says you have to watch one of these movies. Which would it be?
Do you want me to go first?
Sure, it's your show.
If I was forced, I would watch The Post. It does have a very good cast. And again, I don't necessarily have a problem with the idea behind the movie of, like, government is evil and we fucked up Vietnam and it needs to be exposed. Like, there is some truth behind that kind of premise that that is the role of the fourth estate, as they say. It's just that the left takes it too far where they think they're the best part of society because they do this stuff. So that's the one I think I would be able to enjoy the most out of the four.
James?
Yeah, probably Sherlock Gnomes. No. The Post, for the same reason Justin said, basically. Also, Tom Hanks, you know, he's good in roles like this. So
Tom Hanks nowadays, we have to respect more because we have all these memes and all these accounts of people, like, committing sexual assault. And I saw one of the funniest memes this week. It's another woman comes forward to prove that Tom Hanks is indeed a nice guy.
Yeah. It's very good.
Yeah.
It's very good. The meme game was strong this week with that kind of stuff. I liked it.
Memes were strong with us. Daniel, which one would you watch if there was a gun to your head?
So if there's a gun to my head, I would, one, do shrooms, and then, two, watch Sherlock Gnomes. I've never done shrooms before, but I feel like for this movie, you have to. So that's
well, you know
do.
Where else you probably need to use shrooms to actually enjoy it? Reddit. So let us delve into those depths so you don't have to take shrooms. It's time for Reddit on Reddit.
These things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, boring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't post it, but we will repost it.
First Reddit, and this Reddit is very relevant to what we were talking about at the top of the show with the whole Louis C.K. thing and with the whole anonymity thing. So there's a lot going on that we can turn the sort of the camera inward on ourselves. If you were famous, what skeletons in your closet would you be freaking out about right now? Not the skeletons would be freaking out, but what would you be freaking out about right now?
Well, if there were actual skeletons freaking out in my closet, that might be the answer. But oh my God, he has talking skeletons.
Well, Daniel, I think you already answered this by saying you've been non-anonymous for years.
Yeah. No, but the obvious answer is obvious, right? Which is this show.
Yeah.
I worry about that a little bit with my job. And not because I have these deep, you know, actual existential fears about my job in this show. But we do say things on this show in a candid manner. Right? Anyway.
Hey,
I can't
just say Bostonian
today. It's like I'm
Bostonian,
my
man.
My mind is all a blur.
In a Bostonian manner.
I started strong and I'm finishing weak. That's how you do podcasts. That's really how
that's
you
also,
get the audience.
That's also the name of Daniel's sex tape, Starting Strong and Finishing Weak.
That's right. Make him cry.
I stole that joke from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Oh. Well, good. I'm glad that show has some value to someone.
No, one of the best recurring gags on that show is whenever anyone says anything, they have the variation of "that's what she said," where instead it's "that's the name of your sex tape."
I see. Gotcha. So this show would be probably my biggest worry. I don't really have anything else. I mean, I wrote some op-eds as a, you know, college newspaper editor that are, I wouldn't call them risque, but they're certainly opinions that, one, I'm not even sure I hold anymore, but two, that were pretty fucking strong opinions. And one of them, I advocated strongly for using torture to get information from terrorists. That's the one I most remember being controversial because it almost got me kicked off the newspaper. But, yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't be that worried about it, really. I guess. I don't know. You guys? Do you guys rape anyone?
Wow. James?
James, did you rape anyone? The biggest thing I'm worried about is old Facebook posts being taken out of context. But realistically, I would just say, like, all right, guys, I was young. I just kind of threw shit up there, and, you know, I mean, like, I don't stand by everything that I just kind of threw up on the internet, and you're also reading it out of context to boot. So I am kind of worried about this. I am at some point going to purge a bunch of Facebook posts of mine. So
doesn't go away if Facebook has a log of everything you've ever done. So.
Right. So, but you know, if the trolls are lazy, they will at least be stopped by that when I'm famous. So,
yeah. Justin.
So Justin.
Dick pics.
Rape.
What are you?
Yeah. Oh, really? You just ruined my joke.
Oh. I didn't know that would actually be a thing.
You could have just stuck to it.
My transition was going to be literally, can we talk for a minute seriously about dick pics?
I see.
Uh-oh. No, my ex-girlfriend is crazy. I legitimately have a fear in the back of my head that, what if someday, like, I get successful and famous or something, and then she just starts, like, leaking that shit, you know? Like,
yeah.
Or, like, conversations we had. Like, she could legitimately have everything saved.
Yeah, it's but, like, you know, you could just pull the all, like, yeah, that's me. Want to talk about it?
Well, I mean, that is definitely the technique I would use if that were to happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the only thing I would have, but I mean, I don't know how society would react in that case.
I have this feeling, and it's sort of an Adam Carolla fueled feeling about, like, when, you know, our children are old enough to run for office, for instance, like the fact that someone doesn't have a dick pic or sex tape out there is going to be seen as they're a pariah. Like, who wouldn't fuck you when you were young? Why were you so terrible that you wouldn't make a sex tape? Like, that's really going to be more. So I think it's going to be fairly innocuous at some point. I mean, we're already
right. That's
there.
Why I'm not worried about like things I posted on like AOL or on like message boards when I was young. Like people, if they really wanted to dig up, they could look up my old screen names or stuff, or they could even Google JML and find stuff I wrote. And I'm not worried about that because it's like whatever. Like I said, I was a kid. Like I don't think everything I've ever written is frozen as a moment. I mean, it is frozen as a moment in time, but that doesn't mean it represents me now. But, I, you know, I'm more worried about because of, you know, we still have issues with sexuality and things in our culture. And, you know, that was stuff I sent to someone who I shared an intimate relationship with at the time. You know, I shouldn't have. That was a big mistake. You know, I have to question myself that I would even worry about that nowadays because you should be with someone who's high enough character that if it ends, you don't have to worry about that kind of stuff. But I did. And so here I am, and so that's what I worry about.
Yeah, some of our gay fans are frantically hacking at the moment, so.
Yeah, I know, they're trying to get in touch with my ex.
That's right.
To get the pictures, yeah.
She's got a firewall! Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She's got more than a firewall, stay away.
Whoa, zany.
Next Reddit, and this one is all for Daniel.
Yeah.
If you were Rian Johnson, what would your Star Wars trilogy be about?
Of course, if you haven't heard, this comes off the news of Disney announcing that they're giving Rian Johnson his very own trilogy that has nothing to do with the Luke Skywalker saga. In fact, part of it is that they said it will explore areas of the Star Wars universe that like we've not seen before. So I'm even taking this to like the fact that, like, you know, it's a galaxy far, far away, but it's also a galaxy that's far, far apart, where we may not
right,
we may
and
see
before
brand
you,
new characters in their totality. Yeah.
Right, and before you continue, I just want to say, I think this explains why they gave episode 9 back to JJ. I
so
think
they, can,
they, he, they
yeah.
were they were so happy with what Johnson did with episode 8 that they were like, wait, why doesn't he just do a whole new trilogy himself? Because I was wondering, like, are they really just going to keep doing a Skywalker trilogy?
Right.
Every 2 years we get a Skywalker trilogy? Like, we're going to get sick of that eventually. So this was their solution, and obviously they think very highly of Johnson. And you know what? In today's day and age, people deserve opportunities that can do it based on merit. So good for him.
Absolutely. And so, one, it makes me even more excited to see The Last Jedi. But two, and I guess 1B is that it also came out that we're going to see more of Rey and Finn after this 3. So we're going to see more movies with them in it. So they're probably not going to be part of this Rian Johnson trilogy. And then 3 is I'm super stoked. So, you know, there have been answers going around like, oh, we'd like to see like the formation of the Republic and how that came together and how the Jedi has got involved. But honestly, it's a thing where it's like, if they said they're going to explore parts of the universe previously unexplored, doesn't mean they have to do something like almost totally new, like totally, totally, totally new. Living in the same sort of universe, of course, the same laws, the Force exists, you know, there's light side and dark side, etc. But I'd actually like to see them explore, you know, a part of the galaxy that, you know, is unknown to the Republic in its entirety, and how they deal with those issues. Because the Republic has done a pretty shitty job, by the way, of dealing with these issues, and, you know, they basically let the Galactic Empire be formed, so clearly not that great at governing. So let's see how other people deal with the Force, how they deal with light side and dark side. Is it the same across all cultures and all galaxies? No, I don't think so. So that's really nerdy answer, Justin. I feel like we've lost everyone at this point.
Well, that's a very abstract answer.
Yes.
Right? That's an abstract approach to storytelling, which is good. I agree with that completely. That should be the baseline concept of all future Star Wars stories. Is it's just everything is just different stories about how different parts of this galaxy far, far away deal with the Force. I agree. Like, I think that's great. I think that's a great approach to it. And for me, you probably know where I went with this, because it's where I go with all sci-fi stories, and especially because he did Looper previously. Mm-hmm. I would love to see a trilogy in the Star Wars universe about how the Force affects time travel. No reaction from the crowd.
That's because I literally heard silence. I heard the Force.
Yeah, I heard silence that entire time.
And then there was a
long
period of silence. And then I heard no reaction from the crowd. And I thought, okay, that's very nouveau. you want a silent movie about the Force.
Oh, apparently it didn't say it. I said affects time travel.
Oh.
This was we still record over GChat, Midsider, so this was an internet connectivity issue. I said how the Force affects time travel.
Nothing but the best pod for you folks, really. I think that's interesting. And in fact, in like the Clone Wars series, they get a little bit deep into how the Force works. And there are some episodes that not really touch on time travel, but touch on time as an element of the Force just very lightly. And it's all kind of interesting. So I wouldn't be opposed to that kind of thing. It's interesting.
What I'd want to see, and it sounds like they might kind of do this in The Last Jedi, is I'd want to see an order of Jedi who reject both the light side and the dark side and the gray side and try to abide by the Force in a way that is conducive to human life, basically, to say, like, we're not going to reject our emotions, but we're also not going to be... we're also not going to be ruled by them, basically, as opposed to the gray who sound like, oh, well, we're going to have kind of a little bit of both the light side and the dark side. And so it'd be cool if there was an order of Jedi who said, false dichotomy, bro.
Yeah. James doesn't want to see Jedi. He wants to see Jedo. Yeah.
What does that mean?
I think that was a really, really bad joke. I think that's what that means.
It was a very bad objectivism joke. Oh, everything is oh, whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, Jed.
You want to see Jedos.
Or, yeah. Like, you know, maybe a Jedi who's part of... He goes through a journey. Like, he... maybe part one, he's a Jedi. And then part two, he does, like, a Darth Vader-type transformation and becomes a Sith. And then part three is he realizes that it's a false dichotomy and, like... and then learns how to use the Force in a way that embraces the Force as a whole instead of breaking it up into, you know, a false dichotomy of the light and the dark.
That would be cool. Like a wizard's journey of sorts.
All right. Last Reddit. What screams, "I'm a douchebag" in a grocery checkout line?
Justin. Oh, it didn't say who screams. What screams?
I thought you were just going to me for my answer, so you're calling me a douchebag. I mean, yeah, but...
I pictured in my mind you literally screaming, "I'm a douchebag" in a grocery line.
That has happened before. I admit that, yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I was in the 99 cent store the other day, and a guy had a plastic cup full of pennies, and he paid with pennies at the 99 cent store.
No.
Yes.
He made the man at the front go through pennies?
Wow.
Oh, no, he counted them out and handed them, and then, of course, as you have to do as a cashier, the lady, then had to count them herself as well.
Ridiculous. Yeah, it's cruel and unusual.
Ridiculous. And also, anyone who buys more than 10 items at the 99 cent store is a douchebag and a moron.
That's right. That's
people
right.
will go into the 99 cent store and spend like $100. They'll buy 100 items. You are losing money if you're doing that at the 99 cent store. This false illusion of like, I'm saving money. No, you're losing money if you're spending $100 at the 99 cent store.
It's funny.
But you get 100 things, Justin.
People who go through the 20 items or less line with more than 20 items.
Yeah.
I've actually never seen that.
I see it all the time. All the time. What's more of a douchery in the grocery checkout line is that the sign says 20 items or less and not 20 items or fewer. That's really the douchey thing about the checkout line.
Grammar.
I've seen 20 items.
I've written letters when I was younger. Okay.
That's and they changed it thanks to you?
Nope. Walmart ignored me. As they want to do. The worst for
they
me,
want
and it only happens...
letters, Daniel. They want to use less letters because it costs less to print.
Oh, just kill me. Just kill me.
See what I did there?
Just kill me. Just kill me. It's the only one I correct, by the way. I'm not really a grammar enforcer, but that one, for whatever reason, feels like, on my soul, what nails feel like on chalkboard to people's ears. Like, it hurts me. I don't know why.
I have that feeling, like, 20 times a day.
That's right. Whenever you take your penis out in front of women, that's the feeling you have. The one that really, really fucking irks me, and it happens rarely, but it's on my mind because it happened like last week, is people in the checkout line, and then they do this thing where they're like, oh, and like they're middle of checking out, so their stuff is being ringed up, and they go, oh, crap, I forgot to get, in this case, it was organic ketchup or some bullshit, and they actually leave the line to go get it. And you're just standing there waiting, and the cashier's standing there waiting, and it's not like he's going to void all the transactions he just had on ringing this stuff up. So you're just all in this state of limbo of whenever this fucking guy is going to return with his godforsaken organic ketchup.
Two things. One, there actually is a suspend/pause transaction feature on most registers that really should be used in that case. It's just cashiers are, you know, very lowly educated, so they don't do that. But two... my mother used to do this all the time, except as a child, I then had to play a game of supermarket sweep. I never felt more social pressure in my life than it was like, Justin, go back and find the pickles. And like, I have to run through the supermarket because everyone in line is going to be pissed at me based upon how long it takes me to go back in the supermarket and find the pickles.
Yeah, that's awesome. Then you come back, she's like, not dill pickles.
Yeah. That has happened before. It's like, well, you didn't specify. Well, you should have known what I like. You should have known I don't like dill pickles. Go back and get the right ones. And then I look at everyone, and like half of them are angry at me. And then there's the one woman who like feels really bad and is sympathetic. And you can just see it in her eyes.
Yeah, that's awful. That's awful.
James, you have an answer to this Reddit?
This is not a grocery store thing, but just any, I saw this shirt once. This has to be said because it was just of such magnitude. I saw this shirt once that has the silhouette of a pole dancer and it says, "I support single mothers."
Oh my God.
And I just could not understand the psychology of anyone who would purchase that shirt. There's no angle you can take that from where it becomes okay to wear it.
Wow.
Well, how is that even relevant to the question at all?
I would like everyone to be warned that I'm a douchebag and you shouldn't associate with
me. So this is just
like you're self-quarantining.
We're just talking about douchebags now?
Yeah.
Just generic douchebaggery here, because that's it's just on such a scale, I thought I just had to mention it.
Yeah, there are a lot of t-shirts like that. I mean, that one in specifically is, I think, a guy who is trying to demonstrate that he has some sort of sexuality. That's why he would wear a shirt like that. Like, oh, I'm funny and I'm sexual.
Yeah. The one that is more on the grocery store than it is on the person, but still is a person-store interaction that annoys me, is the signing up for the discount card in line.
Mm. Yeah.
Just give them the discount and then hand them the application and tell them to go over there and fill it out or something. But the fact they're standing there with a goddamn pen and paper and they have to write it all on the card and it's the forms where you can only put one letter per box, which makes everything go insanely slowly.
Do you know why they don't do that?
Why?
Because people like me every time would say, yeah, I'm going to sign up. And then I would do that and then immediately throw the thing away after I get my discount and do that every time.
That's fine, except that it fucking annoys everyone else in line. And so they fill out the form meticulously and then they hand it to the cashier. And then the cashier has to type it into the system while you're all waiting there. And then it's like, is that a G or is that a B? I can't tell if that's a G or a B. Is that a B? B for boy? Oh, you don't speak English? Yeah, it's a lot of that, which I hate. But that's more on the grocery store. Fuck you guys.
All right, I think that that sums everything up. I think it's time to put a bow on this episode, mainly because like I'm about to pass out because I need to eat food. What did we learn this trip, Daniel?
I learned that gnomes would probably be a lot more interesting if we were all high.
James?
I learned that Louis C.K. has been just revealing himself psychologically on a level I did not understand for a really long time. And looking back, it is interesting.
Justin, what did you learn?
I learned that I should actually not live in fear of my ex releasing my dick pics, but I should look forward to the day.
That's right. Buy the billboard space now and just put it on hold.
I mean, I think it would mean a couple billboards, but okay. Hmm. Like on top of each other.
That's right. The first sort of like Snapchat vertical video, but vertical billboard for the dick pic.
And based on the time of day and the temperature, the billboard either extends higher or lower. Like if it's cold and rainy, it decreases. Billboard.
That's there. Right. If you would also, I have no idea. Never mind. We're on social media at the Midside everywhere. Don't send us dick pics, please.
Nobody's ever actually done that. There have been a couple of gay people, gay listeners, who have like been like, what about those dick pics, Justin? And I'm like, it's a joke, people. It is a joke.
Do you remember when we used to do a segment called Dick Pick?
Yeah, which it was a dumb internet comment of the week.
Yeah, that's right. I actually really liked the name of that segment. We should bring that back sometime. That'd be fun.
Okay. We'll do that when you give me another Not That D Richards.
Hey. Yeah, shut up. Shut up, Justin. Wanted me to produce the show that I'm on? Fuck you. there are other segments that you'd like to have us bring back, why don't you let us know on all the social medias at the Midside. That's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat. And you can tell us if there's anything that we've done in the past that you want us to bring back. We're not bringing back Yahoo Answers, so stop asking. We love the enthusiasm, but it's never coming back. It's dead. It's dead. You can also listen to all the previous shows if you want to relive the Yahoo Answers segments at themidside.com/podcast. You can find a total archive of every podcast ever. Or you can get the more recent episodes on iTunes or Google Play. While you're there, click the subscribe button and then give us a review of 5 stars. 5 dollar foot-long stars is how many stars we want. Doesn't matter if you hate the show, love it, you're ambivalent to it, 5 stars, and then tell us why. Love our reviewers. Thank you very much. You can also go to this. Oh, I forgot about the store. Justin, I keep forgetting about the store. TheMidSide.com/store, where you can buy a shirt, a False Dichotomy Bro shirt, or a classic logo.
Classic.
T-shirt. And then, of course, Patreon.com. Classic logo. Classic Justin. Always yelling at James. Classic Justin.
Classic reaction of Daniel to Justin. Classic.
That's right. There's also patreon.com/themidside, which is a platform which allows you to support us financially. Every time we produce a piece of content, you agree to give us $1, $2, $5, $0.10, whatever it is that you can afford. It helps us keep the lights on. Actually, I don't have any lights on this morning. That's sad. Not enough Patreon money.
Neither do I. I just have my window open.
Not enough lights. I'm going to put some lights on. We love our Patreon subscribers. You help us pay for things like hosting and advertisements and microphones and all the other cool equipment that we use for this show. Thanks for that. But if you can't do any of that, if you can't buy a shirt, if you don't want to support us on Patreon, no problem. We get it. The economy blows. What you can do is tell a friend. That's free. Friend telling. Today and today only, no cost to you to tell a friend. In fact, you can tell two friends at no cost.
And, wait, today only?
Today only. That's right. Special offer for our listeners. Today only, no cost to tell a friend.
Tomorrow we're going to charge them, though?
I didn't say that. I may have implied it strongly, but I didn't say it, which is the important part. So why don't you go ahead and take advantage of this one-time offer and tell a friend today about the Midside.
Today.
And then your friend will know about the show, which is how... identity works. So, thanks for listening, and we love you. Talk to you next time.
This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin M. Wisniewski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Damn.